Good morning to you. This is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. You're very welcome to take part in the programme. Of all the things that we heard down through the years, this has always stuck in my mind.
Just picture a future conversation that you may have with your daughter, who asks you what you did in your so-called war, Daddy. And you will say, I killed a man of 87. He was sitting with his back to me. He was watching the World Cup. I shot him dead. He was 87. She won't think that the record of a hero, will she?
That was Sir Patrick Mayhew, the man in charge of Northern Ireland, really, at the time, the Secretary of State. He was talking about Barney Green, one of the people killed at Lochan Island. I want to speak to Alison Morris from the Irish News. Alison, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
We've been talking about this since 1994, Alison, and I suppose over the weekend, the bereaved families and the friends of those who were killed saw the documentary, which is about to go on general release. The words there of the Secretary of State certainly they sound hollow, don't they?
It features in the documentary. You see Patrick Mayhew standing outside the House bar the day after the attack and saying those very powerful words, and like the hairs in the back of your neck would stand on edge. But right after that, he said, and the RUC will track you down. They will not stop until they find you. And that, at that point, I think, you know, you could see from the Ombudsman report we had last year, followed on by this documentary, which is a startling piece of investigative journalism, that not only did the RUC not go after them, they knew who they were very quickly. And I went in to watch this film last week for the preview of it, the media preview. And I think that when I went in, I thought, I know all this. You know, we've covered this story. I've covered this story for over the years. I've covered all the various Ombudsman's reports. This is for an American audience. It's not for me. You know, there'll be nothing in this I'll find particularly near startling. But I was amazed at some of the unknown detail and some of the stuff that wasn't in the Ombudsman report that went into it. And I think it's very stark saying that on the big screen in that way. And what I also think is very important is this isn't just Lochan Island. This story is about the people of Lochan Island. And I think it was because it was one of those killings, because it happened during the World Cup while Ireland were playing Italy. And we were all full of hope because of talk of ceasefires, which came very quickly after that. You know, and we could see that Northern Ireland was changing, and then this awful attack happened. So it is one of those things I think that most of us can remember quite vividly. But it could quite easily have been any other atrocity where the family didn't receive, families haven't received justice and they've been left waiting and left in limbo. The Lochan Island families are very dignified, and it wasn't until 10 years after the atrocity that they even went public. And I spoke to some of them this week and they had said they really did have faith, you know, that the police and the state were going to solve this crime. They kept telling them they were. And in fact, that the senior detective told the families, I will leave no stone unturned until I find these killers, which is obviously the name of the documentary. And it turns out, not only did he not leave no stone unturned, you know, the killers were well known. They're named in this documentary. I'll not name them on your radio show, Frank. It's very easy for anyone who wants to go and find their names to find them. But there's a remarkable bit of information about the wife of one of the alleged gunmen who worked for the police. She worked at Newcastle Police Station. And she contacted the police in the days after it on a confidential telephone line twice and named the people she said were the two gunmen and the getaway driver, including her own husband. And she also wrote a letter to Patsy Toman, who was an SDLP councillor at the time, with the same information. And the police recognised her voice on the phone because she was a police employee, and she was brought in less than a year later for questioning and admitted that she was the person who made the phone calls and admitted that she was the person who wrote the anonymous letter. But yet still no one was ever charged in connection with that. And more remarkable, when the journalists working for the documentary went to track them down, this couple are still married. You know, I just find that just bizarre. And I know that Northern Ireland's full of bizarre stories and things that probably wouldn't happen elsewhere. But, you know, the dynamic of that, I just found was so strange.
Yeah, we've decided not to name them on the programme this morning. Their names are clearly in the public domain, yeah, and have been reported in most of the newspapers, including your own newspaper. Do you expect them to take legal action against the newspapers?
No, and we were very careful. Now, I watched the programme one day last week, and the following day we didn't name them, and then the next day we did, because we did give it consideration. While clearly the documentary had been checked by the documentary maker's lawyers, and had also been passed by the British Film Institute's lawyers for general release. As you know, everybody likes their own lawyers to check things. It's my understanding that what happened was that the documentary makers made these people aware quite some time ago that they were making this film and that they were going to be named. And they were approached, and they were also sent letters giving details of what was actually going to be said word for word in the programme, and given a chance to reply. And as of yet, never have. They never have come back. And they sent a private detective to follow the couple, who remain married, and bizarrely found them working up in Twinbrook in West Belfast. They own a cleaning company. And they were working up there side by side every day. So, I mean, it's one of the people has left Northern Ireland and has never been seen. The other person would be known and had a previous record. But it's just, I think that
yeah, we're talking about four people altogether, all of whom eventually were named in the papers over the weekend.
All of them have been named. But, I mean, I suppose the issue isn't, you know, the fact that they've been named now is probably of little comfort to the families, because nothing, they're still past the point where there's unlikely to ever be any kind of criminal charges in this case. And when we look at it in context of that, you know, there's been no convictions and almost 3,000 killings linked to the troubles here, and every one of those families, you know, was left with no answers and no justice. I think it's probably, as journalists, it's important that we could give them a voice and keep letting these people speak and letting them tell their stories. But I think it's a particularly shocking story, and I think it's particularly shocking because this is now, we know that the filmmakers, Alec Gibney, who's won Oscars in the past, this now is going to go on tour and film festivals across the world. And I think it's a very sad indictment of, you know, of Northern Ireland and what happened here, that people around the world will be watching this terrible, terrible injustice. And some of it, I think, you know, there's a few my goodness moments, like when you're watching it and you see just how blatant it was. You know, the getaway car used in Loughlin Island was never set on fire, which we know in previous paramilitary and terrorist murders, usually the car was set on fire to destroy evidence. In this case, it wasn't. It was dumped in a farmer's field and it was found. And when the families went back 10 years later to ask what had happened to the investigation, they found it had been crushed shortly afterwards and destroyed. You know, so there's a series of things like that where you can see that the investigation it was just never adequate, ever, from the very beginning, from day one. And when you think of those very powerful words of Patrick Mayhew, which, you know, they stick in my head, because it is true. You know, the Barney was one of the oldest people ever to be murdered in the Troubles, you know, when he was sitting in a bar watching a football match. You know, there's nothing you can do, and it's more innocent than that. You know, to be shot in the back and then for nobody to ever to be brought to account for that in a wee sleepy place like Loughlin Island. I went down to the GA club down in Loughlin Island on Friday, with the village that all gathered together to watch the film together. And that was one thing that sort of did warm my heart, because there's a lovely togetherness, you know, in that place, and they've always stuck together. And, you know, sometimes the families, there's differences of opinion and so on. When they've always been very together as a group, you know, and as a group of families. And when I spoke to them, they said, you know, not to take away from the people who lost loved ones and atrocities that happened in the cities and bombings that happened in the cities, but they were just oblivious almost to the Troubles. It was something you watched on the news. It was something they never thought would come to Loughlin Island, into their wee village, into that wee bar that night. You know, it's such a lovely place, such a lovely part of the world to be touched with such evil.
Yeah, well, just wonderful people, Loughlin Island people. I played against them regularly at that time, and including the people who were caught up in it in football. And just, you know, just salt of the earth community, and unfortunately tarnished forever by this atrocity. And you wrote on Saturday morning in the paper one very disturbing story in relation to one of the police officers who was interviewing the man who has been accused of being the gunman.
There's a retired police officer who participates in the documentary. He was a detective, Jimmy Binns, and he claims he claims on camera, and he's quite open about it. He said that when they did arrest the chief suspect, they brought him to the police station, and he was basically asked, "Did you shoot those people in the Heights?" He said no, and that was the end of the interview. And after that, he said they had to make the pretense of keeping them there for a few hours. And the detective who was interviewing him, he claimed, was so terrified of this local Republican who the detective believed was trying to kill him, that he then spent 2 hours trying to convince the chief suspect in this case that this Republican was in fact trying to kill him in order to try and coerce him to kill this Republican. So he said there was this bizarre situation where this police officer was afraid that this man was trying to kill him. So he tried to convince someone else to kill this man first. And for that to be happening inside a police station, you know, in Northern Ireland in the 90s, you know, it's quite a bizarre story. The man who he was trying, as should have been said, he was trying to have killed, is still alive, but he hasn't commented. We did try and contact him for comment, and he didn't return our calls.
Yeah, the Republican.
Yeah.
It's just, if this was in a film, if this was made up, you simply would not believe any of it. However, it is absolute reality. And then the reaction from one of the current assistant chief counsels in relation to the documentary, it's been questioned in the paper a number of times, including, I think, this morning in your own paper as well. We're reminded of what assistant chief constable Stephen Martin said.
He is, and the families were very disappointed at that, because rather than address the content of the programme, now, in fairness, Steve Martin did say that this was a terrible killing and he condemned it, said it was an atrocity. But what he also did say, the programme has documents, and these documents were from an unredacted police ombudsman report. So the police ombudsman report that we all received, it had the names taken out in ciphers put in instead. The documentary makers managed to get the unredacted version of a police ombudsman report through a leak, which had the names in it. We know that there's already an investigation going on to leaks from the police ombudsman, and that's been going on from last year. And Steve Martin said that he would now be asking that that investigation takes on board these documents and investigate the origins of them. And I think for the people of Loch Island, that just showed a misplaced sense of priorities on behalf of the police. You know, rather than worry where the evidence that pointed towards these people came from, you know, should the police not be trying to salvage together some kind of investigation, even at this late stage, and try and bring prosecutions, rather than possibly concern themselves about where the evidence and where the documents came from?
Yeah, I suppose everything has to be investigated. That would be the argument from the police on that one. But it did seem, and it certainly comes across reading about it and hearing from the families in Loch Island, it came across as clumsy, or the timing of his comments were clumsy.
Definitely poorly timed. I mean, I think it could have been a better thought out statement, because it seemed that was where the police's priorities lay. You know, the fact that this document had been leaked was inconsequential to the fact that, you know, in my mind, that six people were murdered and many others were injured. I think one of the people, if you watch it, Aidan O'Toole, who was the barman who was working that night, and he was injured, and I've interviewed him many times over the years, and he is just, you know, he is a shadow of himself. You know, there's this grown man who every time you try and speak to him, he cries, and it's an awful thing to have to, even as a journalist, to have to deal with. And in the documentary, you can see that he's shaken, and he relives that every day, you know. And we talk about a lot of the families of the victims too, but people who survive these atrocities, you know, they carry that with them for the rest of their lives. You know, anyone who was there on the scene of Loch Island with Shanklebaum or Enniskillen, or, you know, any of the Rising Sun, any of these atrocities, you know, to watch something like that is horrendous, and to have to carry that around you then for the rest of your days, but also knowing that the people who carried it out don't actually live that far from you, and, you know, have never done a day inside a prison cell.
I was talking to a builder over the weekend who, 3 years after the atrocity, was working in the general area, and he was using a staple gun, and someone came over to him and asked him not to use the staple gun. This was the owner of the house, and he said, "Why do you not want it used?" And then he went on to explain that he had been in Loch Island that night, and he was still suffering from the sound of the staple gun was making him suffer. And the builders actually spent 2 days longer doing the job, because they had to hammer everything in as opposed to use this thing that made the sound. That's the sort of trauma that people are carrying with them, and he was but a bystander at the atrocity. So those who were caught up in it, whatever the example of atrocity is, we wipe it from our minds very easily, and time and again we are starkly reminded of what they have been going through. One final question, Alison: do you expect the couple, we'll call them the couple, to be doorstepped in the near future, or is that journalism being taken too far?
I think we've all tried to get a hold of them, to be quite honest with you. I noticed the Sunday Life yesterday said they managed to get them, but they closed the door on them, and the Irish News tried again during the week. Their house is, you know, almost think they knew this was coming. Their house is very secure, and it's very gated, and it's way back from the road. But I mean, look, I suppose they can't stay in there forever. You know, they will have to come out and face it. for them, I don't know where they go from here, you know, whether or not they speak. But, I mean, they were given the opportunity to speak either themselves or through a solicitor or something else, and they haven't. But, I mean, it's awful to be labelled with such an atrocity and then to find out that, you know, not only was the wife of this man a police employee, but she told people, you know, she told several people. We don't know her motivation for doing that. And we also don't know how they managed to remain a couple after she did that. But those are questions we'll probably never know the answer to, because as of now, it doesn't look like the first big Indianians.
It is. It's heartbreaking in every regard, and it's also disgusting, equally as disgusting as it is heartbreaking. Alison, thank you for your time this morning. Thank you.
No problem. If you'd like
to read Alison's coverage, it is in-depth there in the Irish News. 26 minutes past nine. Good morning. I'll speak to Margaret Ritchie, who was the MP for the area at the time, in a moment.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.
Good morning to you. 90333105. Some of the text coming through. Frank, does the trauma from the Troubles for survivors of incidents include those who suffered who were in the UDR, RUC and British Army, survivors from those units? Obviously, it does. Frank, there was a shooting at Brown's Pub, now called the Farmers, on the Cullen Glen Road in Belfast during the Troubles. There's never any mention of it, says David. Frank, what's it going to take for you and the media to believe the RUC was rotten to the core from top to bottom, a murdering sectarian so-called police force? The investigators of these killings are more likely still high-ranking in the PSNI. Wake up, Frank, says this texter. And this one says, Frank, you're just back. And again, we're talking about politics and religion. Says it all about your show, says Paul. Hey, Paul, good morning. Good morning to you. If we do talking points on the radio, Paul, and over the weekend, a bereaved community saw a documentary which shone new light on a series of murders in that little village, well, then it's a talking point. And it's to be covered on a programme like this. I can't understand why you would think the media shouldn't be covering it. Last week, this week, or if anything further happens, next week and beyond. Let me speak to Margaret Ritchie. Margaret Ritchie, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Margaret, the community, are they any further forward, the good people of Loughan Island, having seen the documentary?
I live, Frank, some 3.5 miles from Loughan Island, a peace-loving, tranquil community, as characterised by Alison in her report to you earlier on. This film, No Stone Unturned, this documentary, and last year's Police Ombudsman's report clearly highlight that there's evidence that there was collusion, and there now needs to be acceleration on the part of the police to apprehend those who were responsible for this heinous, dastardly crime that robbed six men off their lives and left families totally devastated. That's the bottom line. There's no two ways about this. The police have to act, and they must not use any distractions, like has been suggested in the Belfast Telegraph and in the Irish News, to suggest such a thing means that they are not fully committed to an investigation. That is their job as police officers and as a police service.
But the distractions, you're referring to ACC Martin, his comments about documents being stolen?
Absolutely. There is none of us in any doubt that all murder during the Troubles was wrong and was totally uncalled for and should never, ever have happened. There was no need to take up arms whatsoever, because the solutions lie in politics and political negotiations. But the bottom line is the police shouldn't add to the agony and anguish of these families. People that I know very, very well, some of them who are indirectly related to me and who feel the trauma and feel that bereavement on a day-by-day basis. They require and they deserve and they demand, and I'm with them to a man and to a woman. They deserve that justice and that truth, and I hope that that will come. The police must now investigate those lines of inquiry and investigation that were revealed in last year's Police Ombudsman's report. And I want to know, and the public want to know, what has happened since that report was published, and what action have they taken, and what has been the result of that action? As a result of that documentary, which will be put on general release later this week. We want to know what action they're going to take as a result of that, to apprehend those people who are responsible for this crime that robbed six good men of their lives and changed a very tranquil community where the people are the absolute salt of the earth.
This notorious couple, plus the other well-known UVF man and a fourth person who's only been peripherally referred to in the coverage, none of their names were mentioning on the radio this morning. But let's start with the couple who, it says in the paper, exactly where they live. We could all turn up at their house right here, right now. So there's no puzzle in relation to locating these people. Do you expect them to be arrested, or is there any point in arresting them at this point?
Well, look, if these people are responsible, then, and if anybody else is responsible, and the police have evidence, and there's now new evidence to suggest various things, then they people should be pursued. I remember reading that letter that Patsy Toman received, because Patsy brought it to me, and I told him at that stage to go to his solicitor.
This is a letter. This is a letter from the woman in the couple who worked in as a civilian employee at Newcastle Police Station. She's married to the alleged gunman, and she sent a letter to one of your colleagues.
Yes, sent a letter to Patsy Toman, who has since retired. Patsy brought that letter to me. I knew it was when I read it. It was very chilling. And Patsy and I both agreed that he would go to see his solicitor and go and bring it to the police, which happened. Little did I know that the scribe of that letter actually worked in Newcastle Police Station. But nonetheless, the point is that the police should have accelerated that inquiry. They should have left no stone unturned. And I remember standing outside O'Toole's bar that day in Loughlin Island when the then Secretary of State made those powerful comments. Those powerful comments and those words by the then RUC should have been followed up with absolutely fulfilled promises to accelerate the inquiry and to ensure that all those responsible were made subject to the due process of the law, instead of leaving stones not turned, because that is actually what has happened in relation to the Loughlin Island inquiry. Things have been left to lie there and to fester instead of doing the job that they're supposed to do as investigators.
Do you think we'll ever fully get to the bottom of it? Do you think we'll completely understand why the likes of this man who's been described as a serial killer, who was apparently guilty of many other gun attacks on behalf of the UVF, considering what's been written in the papers over the weekend, do you think we'll ever fully get an understanding of how he seemed to be above the law?
Well, I find it totally impossible to comprehend why anybody who committed, or people who committed such heinous crimes, should be above the law, when those whose lives they have taken have left very sad, very sorrowful families, robbed families of fathers, of brothers, of uncles, and left devastation in their wake. That, to me, is the cruel tragedy of all of this, that people have been allowed, due to lack of investigation by the then RUC, people have been left to go and do their ordinary jobs on a daily basis without being fully investigated and without convictions and prosecutions. I'm in absolutely no doubt, Frank, there must be prosecutions, there must be convictions, and those who did this terrible thing to those six men in Loughlin Island must be held accountable. People forget.
Hard to deliver, Margaret, when most of the evidence has been destroyed.
And I appreciate that all the evidence seems to be now available. Obviously, there was collusion. But people must remember that Loughlin Island and the surrounding parishes where those men came from, it was a very peaceful, tranquil community where the Troubles had never visited it before. We all lived as a cohesive, on well with all our neighbours and all our friends. We helped each other out. That's the sort of community that these gunmen invaded, and they knew what they were doing when they took those six lives away. And
but just on that, Margaret Ritchie, do you and do the people in Loughan Island feel there could still be convictions, considering that part of the story is the destroying of evidence?
I would hope that there could still be convictions, because at the end of the day, the police ombudsman also needs to provide the supplementary details of the investigations he was going to carry out into the whole Brian Nelson affair, which was, shall we say, supplementary to the Loughan Island investigation. And wrapped into that was the murder of Peter McCormick in the Sierra Firth Inn in Kilcoo some 2 years before Loughan Island.
It is such a sinister, sinister story. Margaret, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
If, as I say, the like of this was in a film or in a thriller, you would simply not believe it. But it's the reality of the Northern Ireland that we've lived in the 1990s. Bill has a point to make. He's on line two. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Bill.
Frank, listening to your show there, I believe, yeah, that people should seek justice. But all people should seek justice. We had the Enniskillen bombings, we had Le Mans, we had the Shankill bombing. You know, why are they different? Why is the investigators and the reporters of these papers not doing the same? They know who the murderers were. They didn't know the connection between one of them bombings. The guy still...
Yeah, but Bill, hold on before you start accusing people. I can't allow you to start IDing people on the radio. However, this is the important bit. The media is as interested in catching the Enniskillen bombers as it is in catching the Le Mans bombers, as it is in catching the Narrowwater bombers, as it is in catching the gunmen in Loughan Island. The media would like to play its part in catching all the guilty parties and play its part in highlighting the horrific events that were carried out right across Northern Ireland. The media doesn't stand in the dock here. The media is to be praised for bringing this documentary to fruition, because this is a story, like the other stories that you've referred to, they are stories that need to be told.
Frank, I take on your point and I accept what you're saying, but also you're not making these people the target at all, sir. They're not convicted of anything.
Say again. Just say that again.
See the people who actually have been named in these papers, you're not making them as a target. They haven't been convicted of anything. This is, I mean, the list of arms, we are innocent until proven guilty. None of these people, I'm not, by the way, I don't think I'm taking sides here. I mean, I want to say it from both sides of the community, but, you know, sometimes the media and the press need me to keep working. Three fueling this fire. And I'd like to know, does everybody want to mind of what happened there once again? Does everyone singing from the same hymn sheet that, yes, we want this to be brought up again so we can go through all the hurt and pain again? Let's try it. You said that about the guy who couldn't stand the noise and the builders are doing work. You know, and that kind of reminded me of, you know, people do want to forget. People do want to leave it in the past. But it would just seem to go, we're 20 years in the peace process and we still want to bring it all up to the top again. The guy probably said they're Enniskillen, Le Mans, Shank. There's probably people sitting listening to your show going, yeah, my cousin or my brother, my sister, my aunt or mother with children. Has that brought it back to them people again? Do we need to keep reminding people that all of us suffered, someone who lived through the troubles, all of us suffered, you can't get away from it.
Okay, Bill, you've made your point very clearly, but thank you indeed for what you're saying, your opinions on what Bill's contribution has been. Very welcome as well. Some of you asking about how you listen back to the programme, u105.com/catch-up, and anything that we did in the first 45 minutes, in just over an hour or so, it'll be up there and you will be able to listen back to it. Jeff mentioned something similar, but David is saying, please excuse my ignorance, I am late coming to the programme this morning. Would you kindly give me a quick overview of the programme on Loughan Island, as I'd like indeed to listen back to it or download it, says David. So you can listen back to what we've been discussing on u105.com/catch-up. And as for the actual documentary, it goes on general release on Friday. You'll be able to see it at selected cinemas on Friday. Colin has a point to make. Good morning, Colin.
Frank, how are you?
Very well, Colin. Go ahead.
Frank, the Loughan Island was a series of murders that happened after the atrocity and the shootings on the Shankill Road. Obviously, then you had the trick-or-treat up in Londonderry as well. And it just shows you what both sides were able to flick on each other and the hatred Frank it's going about at that particular time. And it just seems, you know, that everything, you know, is a waste of time coming right through, because when you look at now and then look what's happening on the table and you're supposed to be talking, you know, the injuries and the deaths and the murders that, you know, divided families, and including Loughlin Island, Shankill Road, Enniskillen, you know, we can go right through them all. But people at that time, I mean, it seems a bit barbaric, Frank, and everybody's forgetting about it, you know.
Sorry, my microphone for some reason wasn't working there, Colin. Colin, you make very relevant points. We lived in a barbaric time, and the sadness of it we're being reminded of this morning.
We are indeed, Frank. You know, unfortunately, Frank, it's not only Loughlin Island. Look, you remember I had a wee conversation with you, and I told you we had a wee rally there on Saturday, the Crown Forces rally.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And we had that on Saturday, and we mentioned some of the atrocities on both sides, which happened right across the board. And I, you know, and my analysis at the end of it all, Frank, what I've said is, and this is what I said to your producer there, you know, at the end of the day, Frank, to say there hadn't been no IRA, Frank, and when they upraised, there'd been no murders, and there'd been no UDR, there'd been no inquest into killings, Frank, and there'd been no barbaric, you know, on either side. This is driven from pure hatred, you know. And it seems now that, you know, it wasn't all about sectarianism, it wasn't about religion. It's about money and power, Frank.
Yeah, but, you know, Colin, people will be screaming at the radio, and I can't, you know, play out an argument or a discussion or a debate that I had with you before on the radio.
Yes.
But, you know, where how you could link the IRA to the killings in Loughlin Island, people will be, you know, shaking their fists. But at the end of the day, we can't go round in circles on it. And
we can't, Frank. You're right. And it's a tragedy what's happened. And as I say, we could have documentaries into every killing, Frank, and every both sides of families, you know, Enniskillen and Darkley as well, Frank, you know, are going to be abhorrent and exactly what happened. But it just shows you the society that we lived in then, and the tit for tat that people was prepared to go to, Frank, you know.
And also the big issue of collusion, which is something that I've discussed with you before, and you have your opinion on it. But, Colin, we're not going to be able to go over the same argument as we had on the programme a couple of weeks ago. I do appreciate you coming back to me, however. It's 14 minutes to 10. More of your input after this.
Your point, your platform. The Frank Mitchell phone-in for you.